it's okay to say, I need help. I need to speak to someone. Any of our members 24 hours a day can call this number, and there is someone on the other end to provide that service that they can talk to. People will respect you, will trust you, will buy into what you're doing if they know you can be vulnerable and be humble with it and be able to admit, hey, that's on me. That's what good leaders do. We're developing a decon depot at one of our fire stations. We want to help our people be successful. We want to set them up for success. And I have the opportunity as the chief of the department to ensure that does happen.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-host Bonnie Rimley, LCSW EMT. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with Anthony Perez. He's the fire chief of Pasco County, Florida, about his leadership journey in the fire service.
We'll also be bringing you a new installment of Resilience Toolbox. We'll be spotlighting Pronuvo, the company pioneering proactive whole-body imaging for the early detection of cancer and other diseases. Between March 6th and March 20th, 2024, you can enter to win a Pronuvo full body scan, and we're also offering a discount code for $300 off a Pronuvo scan.
Like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Respond to Resilience. We're on Facebook, Respond to Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, and all the podcast platforms, and check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Chief Perez after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job.
In this family, up to a quarter of 911 telecommunicators have symptoms of post-traumatic stress.
In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis,
while responders are quietly suffering.
In this family, many struggle with job-related stress,
burnout, trauma, sleep disruptions, substance abuse,
and relationship problems.
In this family, we can help the helpers.
With vital information and resources,
resilience strategies,
and success stories of overcoming the obstacles.
In this family, no one is alone.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rimley, LCSW EMTB.
This episode is made possible by R.E. Lawler Graphics and Printing. Let R.E. Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. To learn more, visit relawler.com.
And we'd like to welcome Chief Perez to the episode today. Chief Perez is the fire chief of Pasco County, Florida, and he's also a Pasco County citizen himself. He began his firefighting career as a firefighter in Pasco County over 26 years ago, and eventually transferred over to Tampa Fire Rescue, where he served in field operations as well as chief of operations and chief of personnel. When the opportunity came to return back home to Pasco County, Chief Perez jumped at the opportunity to serve his home community and officially started July 31st, 2023. In addition to his passion for fire and emergency response operations, he's also driven in servant leadership and motivating and inspiring others to reach their full potential and to continuously grow. He mentors, teaches, speaks at conferences, and regularly engages in community and charitable events alongside his wife and children. He has a strong faith and very family-oriented values, and his priority is always providing the best resources and support for the men and women on the front lines, while increasing their protection and quality of life to the fullest. If that isn't an amazing mission statement, I don't know what is. Welcome, Chief Perez.
Thank you. Thank you so much, David. Bonnie, thank you for having me here and sharing my testimony story with you all. Thank you so much.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. Thanks for taking the time. You know, we love to ask our guests what brought them into this world. We have our own stories, but can't wait to hear yours.
Thank you. Can't wait to share it.
Could you tell us a little bit about what led you into the fire service?
Yes. My brother. So just to take a step back, I was a professional baseball player. I grew up in the profession. I went to college out in Oklahoma, played some junior college. And then that would eventually lead me into playing professional baseball. When I was done with professional baseball, I was trying to find my way in life. And my brother, being a firefighter up in New Jersey, he planted the seed. I was coaching high school baseball. And he's like, hey, how, I was already in Tampa, Florida. And he's like, hey, why don't you become a firefighter down in Tampa? You know, I thought at the time it was like back home up north. You take a test, you get on the list, and you wait for your name to be called. Well, right. Down in Florida, it's slightly different. You have to go to the fire academy. You have to go to EMT school. Mm-hmm. And then you can apply after accomplishing those two skill sets. So that's how it all started for me. I got hired in Pasco County in 1997, January of 1997. I worked here for 8 months, and then I eventually transitioned over to the city of Tampa for 26 years. But it was actually my brother who planted that seed and the long journey, a long blessing, I should say, in the fire service. And I'm here today because of him.
Well, how rewarding for your brother to be able to look at you as a chief and where you've gotten yourself to and what you've accomplished, all from one conversation.
Yes, it's been it's been a good journey. You know, when I first got into the fire service, I knew nothing about the fire service. I didn't know what a coupling was versus a 24-foot extension ladder, but I learned that through the academy. And as I got on the job, you know, I developed a passion for this profession. Mm-hmm. At the time in Tampa, you only had to be an EMT. You didn't have to be a paramedic. And yes, I was learning the trade. I was learning how to be a good firefighter. But I wanted to become more. And I had a desire to become a paramedic. I went on to paramedic school. And I know during our orientation, we had to do a pediatric rotation. And Susan Goodman, who is no longer with us, she passed away. She was giving our pediatric orientation, and she was going through what we needed to do, some of the requirements, some of the things that we needed to do to sign up and make sure we get our hours in. And right then I said, I want to work in the ER as a paramedic, but in pediatrics. I wanted to work with small children. So after the conversation and after she gave her orientation spiel, I walked up to her and I'm like, Ms. Goodman, I know what I want to do when I get done with paramedic school. I want to work in an emergency room on my days off as a pediatric medic. And she looked at me like I was crazy, like, okay, yeah, whatever. Yeah, okay, no problem. Come see me when you're done. And I did. And I brought that story back up to her. She did remember. And I worked 4 years in the ER, St. Joseph's Hospital here in Tampa, Florida. Right. It was a level 2 trauma center. And that's, I wanted to work with pediatrics and with kids. And I learned so much about working with pediatric kids that it only elevated my medic skill set out in the field. I was never afraid to take on that pediatric emergency. I was never afraid to intubate, never afraid to start that IV. And then that just continued on. I wanted to become a captain, and I wanted to become a chief, and eventually leading to becoming a fire chief if the door of opportunity ever presented itself. And for me, man, being a faith, it had to be in God's plan and God's will. And even to this day, I'm still continuing to learn about the profession and my master's program, and I'm trying to. And I'll be done with that next year, God willing. So it started here, but it's still moving and it's still progressing. And I'm thankful for so many people along the way that have been instrumental, starting with my brother and continuing to lean on those mentors that I still have in the fire service today.
Ready to improve your fundraising efforts and elevate your organization's communications through direct mail with Ari Lawler? Let Ari Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. With a proven track record of assisting fire departments, police unions, PBAs, churches, schools, and more in raising much-needed funds through unique strategies and expertise. Technologically advanced, their production line and personnel are experts in navigating all the latest postal service regulations and mail requirements. Simply put, Ari Lawler will save you money on your next fundraising campaign. With over 35 years of experience, Ari Lawler Graphics and Printing are leaders in fundraising through direct mail. They too are first responders and understand your needs better than any other direct mail marketing company. And they are family business who take pride in offering their clients the finest service at the most competitive rates. Experts in design, print, and mail, they do it all, and they get results. Experience the Ari Lawler difference. Check out their website, arilawler.com, or give them a call today. Ari Lawler Graphics and Printing. Raising money has never been so easy.
Yeah. Just a question with your pediatric work. It's such a blessing for people to have a comfort level with pediatrics because it can be quite terrifying, especially when it's a really difficult call, like a cardiac arrest or an MVA where they're really injured. I wanted to ask you, how did you deal with that emotionally?
So, you know, we spoke about it. During that time, we didn't have peer support. There was really nothing for mental health back. We're talking in the late 90s. And I dealt with that, Bonnie, by just talking about it. I had to. And that was just my outlet. I spoke about it. I shared my concerns. I was able to relive the scene, that particular scene. And we did. And we encouraged. We didn't even know that was CISM. That was peer support. They didn't call it that at that time. But I always encourage members to talk about it. Let's have conversation. And that's how I was able to overcome a lot of those bad calls, right? That we see on a we can't see on a daily basis.
Oh, it's great that you were in a system where that was common practice.
Well, it was a system for me in the firehouse. It wasn't common at that time.
Right.
It wasn't common across the job because, you know, growing up, it was like, hey, just deal with it. Be tough.
Yeah.
You got to move on. And that was never me. I always had that empathy. I believe in, you know, it was okay to show emotion back then. Right.
Sure.
And that's what we did. And it was a good journey because fast forwarding it to today, you know, we do have those resources in place and it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to raise your hand and say, hey, you know what? I need to speak with someone and it's okay. And we encourage that. We do.
That's great.
Great. I think we'll definitely dive deeper into that piece of the mental wellness in the fire service. But first I wanted to ask you this, Chief. So you started in Pasco County, went to Tampa for 26 years, and then the opportunity came up to come back to Pasco as the chief. What is it like to take on that role and kind of come into a department and sort of have whatever that slate looks like? How do you approach it? What was that like for you to gear up and get things the way you wanted them or towards the direction of where you wanted them?
It was a little nervous. I was a little nervous stepping into a department that I used to work for 26 years ago. Mm-hmm. Coming in, I still considered the outsider. And what I did is I evaluated, right? I gave everyone a clean slate. I wanted to evaluate the department as a whole, evaluate the staff as a whole. And I wanted to know historically where we were, where we currently are, and where we're looking to take this department. Look at where the gaps are and how do we fix those gaps. And the goal for the executive staff at this level was to make sure that it's not about us, but it's about the rank and file and how we can empower them and give them the resources to allow them to be successful in regards to being involved with the community we serve. There were some uneasy moments at the time. I had to have some difficult conversations with some of the leadership team. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to ensure that we were all on the same team, the vision and the direction that I laid out, we were all going to buy into it and we were all moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. So becoming a chief of any department, there's always going to be leadership changes. There's always going to be change. Some good, some not so good for people, but you know, I'm a good listener, right? And I believe in if I'm a good listener, I'm going to be a good communicator. And I allowed them to communicate. I tried to actively listen. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it was making the decision that's in the best interest for the entire organization and not for one specific person. And unfortunately, you all know when you get in this position and you have to make change, you get one shot at this. You get one opportunity to make it right. And I'm so grateful and thankful that when I came in at the end of July, beginning of August, the county, my leadership team above me says, hey, we're going to allow you to bring in your leadership team. You evaluate, you tell us where the gaps are, and we'll work with you. And I am grateful. It took time. The goal was to have this done in 60 days. Well, it took me 75 days, right? According to that whole 100-day plan. Yeah. But it's okay. I have a leadership team here now that is, I'm so proud of them because their vision is aligned with my vision for this department. And we're gonna move it in that direction. It's gonna take some time, but it's okay.
And in terms of your vision, Chief, and the vision of the department and the community, I've known or I've heard that Pasco County is growing rapidly. There's probably a lot of change. Probably have to deal with a lot of infrastructure and population growth and need for additional services and things like that. So, what's your vision from today moving forward in the next 3 to 5 years? What does that look like?
So you're absolutely correct, David. The county is one of the fastest growing counties in the state of Florida. We cover 747 square miles, and that also includes the water. So right now, our vision for the next 3 years is we have a 3-year implementation plan for what's called the D-shift. So we're going to move away from the traditional 24-48. Mm-hmm. And we're going to 24-72 for that work-life balance. That's the mental health perspective and platform that we took as a department, and the county agreed, and we became a unified front. And that's that 3-year plan. We're going to bring on. We have to mimic a whole nother shift for the work-life balance. We are growing, so we do have right now within the next 3 to 5 years. We have 3 more stations coming online within the next 2 years, and we have another 4 more stations coming online within the next 5 years. So planning for that when it comes to money, funding, we do have the funding available. We do have the bonds available, the GO bonds, but we just have to be good stewards of the community's money. And we want to ensure that those stations do come online because we do have some gaps that we need to fill, and those stations are going to help fill those gaps with the personnel to help that service delivery area. So right now, the priority is the 3 to 5 year with the addition of the D shift, as well as the additional stations coming online, and it's exciting because just to give you a historical timeline, 5 to 10 years ago, we were grown, but we weren't growing as fast as we are today. So we started to fall behind here in Pasco County. That's not the case today. We are keeping up with growth and development. We're keeping up with technology and software. We're keeping up with the industry changes of the mental health perspective. We just want to ensure moving forward for the next 5 to 10 years that we're maintaining that growth. And right now, the county commissioners, our county administrator, our assistant county administrator, they're all on board with what we're asking for and where we're trying to take this department. That's where we're at right now. We're still hiring. We're hiring a lot of people. right now, we're going to onboard 26 new firefighters at the end of this month. Wow. We're looking to onboard another 33 more firefighters April of 2024. And then we'll have an additional 60 more firefighters that we'll have to onboard by the end of the year, but we'll break them up in two sections.
Wow.
You're tracking, O'Malley. Let's go.
Oh, hey, it's me. The subtle and persistent changes in your health that you have had for 2 weeks. I'm here to slow you down.
What's up, O'Malley? 20 push-up is usually no sweat for you.
You can try to ignore me. But I'm not going anywhere.
Come on, O'Malley.
Uh-oh, looks like someone's feeling tired.
I'm fine.
Subtle and persistent changes in your health, you know, like fatigue, can be an early warning sign of cancer. So don't be a dummy and ignore it. Right, O'Malley? O'Malley? O'Malley?
You know, I was going to ask you, how do you balance the recruitment and retention issues with knowing that you have to meet these specific number goals over a certain amount of time?
So twofold. So we're really trying to tap into the social media platforms to really promote our department. We use a platform through the State Fire College called the A-List that we're trying to promote our department, and it gets pushed out. But we're in order to onboard these individuals, we have to break them up. I call them clusters, but we have to break them up in groups because we can only onboard to provide a good level of service, to provide good quality training. It's 33 max. That's our top end. So we just have to be strategic. Our academy right now is an 8-week academy, probationary academy. Mm-hmm. So we just have to be strategic, be smart with it. So what we're looking for, we are gaining a lot of interest now from other departments, people who work for other departments that want to come over to our department because one, we're going to that fourth shift. Two, we're growing as a mm-hmm. department, which allows for more promotions and more growth. So what we are looking for members who come over with experience, and this is, we haven't nailed down a cutoff, but let's say 3 years, right? 3 years, you come up with three or more years of experience. We're going to put you through what we call a hybrid, a hybrid class. Instead of going 8 weeks, we're going to put you through a 4 week. So now we can onboard them and get them out into the streets a lot sooner. We can cut down that reflex time, but we're being creative. We're being open to new ideas from the leadership team on how we can onboard these group of individuals. So it's fun. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
We'll want to be smart with it as well.
Just out of curiosity, how many are lateral moves, or if you could predict, how many would be lateral moves versus brand new ground zero folks who are just joining the service?
So with this, I'll use this onboarding class here that was coming mm-hmm. on in at the end of January. The 26 right now that we're onboarding, 15 to 18 are from previous departments.
Okay.
So it goes to show you where we're heading and the direction this department is going. And it's good. It's a good feeling to have because they're coming on with some experience. Now the others are right out of the fire academy and they're new, but it's okay, right? All I ask is you come in with a positive attitude and a great work ethic, and we'll teach you the rest.
That's great. It's really encouraging to see the lateral moves because you had spoken about it before with Connecticut and how the process works up in our neck of the woods, but it's harder to make some of the lateral moves in terms of departments up here from what David and I have seen. So it's nice to see that there's a possibility for more mobility for people because one of the things that comes up in my office as a trauma therapist is if someone's stuck in a toxic department where there's toxic leadership or there's no mental health support, they really feel trapped in a lot of situations and they feel they have no options or that they will have to lose everything in order to get that lateral move. So what you're saying is quite encouraging and I'm hoping that's the direction things go in the future for all firefighters, not just in Florida.
And I empathize with what you said. It is out there. It's embedded. I think sometimes it deals with culture and tradition. Sometimes I think it's lack of understanding, lack of leadership.
Right.
You know, I've experienced what you talked about, right? The feeling trapped, feeling that you have no place to go.
Right.
You have to walk on eggshells because you have autocratic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that course that leads into fear and intimidation. And that's not healthy for the soul. That's not healthy for us. So, and we do recognize those deficiencies. And we want to help our people be successful. We want to set them up for success. And I had the opportunity as the chief of the department to ensure that does happen, right? We're here to provide a service. And we are here to serve our community with top-notch care. And that's what we're going to do because I'm going to do it. So I expect and to hold our members accountable. But create an environment of family, right? We're here to take care of each other because at the end of the day, we want to be healthy.
I love to hear that. You know, we don't hear it all the time, so it's quite refreshing for us. And that's why we highlight chiefs like you, who are willing to talk about these difficult things, you know, and I think in some way you're being very vulnerable with us, allowing us to grill you like this for 40 minutes. So
it
shows a lot about your character, and I know that our listeners will really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I think what's also important for other leaders, whether they're emerging leaders or currently in that position, is when we are able to bring people like you, Chief, on our show to talk about these things, it you know, I think it helps to open up the conversation and maybe even enable permission for other leaders to change, right? Or to change the approach to leadership. Maybe that the ways we've been doing it in the past are not necessarily effective today. So thank you for being part of that process. I did want to ask you about mental health or mental wellness and kind of where you see the challenges today, whether it's in the fire service in general or in your department and specifically. What do you think our biggest challenges are, and what are some of the tools you see that are going to be effective to help our brothers and sisters to work through that?
The biggest challenge I see today is people afraid to speak, you know, and it starts from the top, right? They are not encouraged to say, hey, I have a problem. I need help. And that mindset has to change. That's, at least that's what I see here in Florida. And I have friends throughout the country that I speak with, and they're running through the same thing. It's okay to say, I need help. I need to speak to someone. And those things can come from personal issues. I tell people, invest in your people, like invest in them, find out what life was about. Like, are they married? Do they have kids? You know, are they, you know, what challenges did they face growing up? And I think if you invest in your members, your rank and file, I believe they will eventually, you will build that level of trust, which creates vulnerability, right? Because here in the fire service, we have this, for some reason, this mindset, this mentality that we're tough. We're not tough. We are human, just like everyone else. We go through our struggles and challenges every day. So advocating to say, hey, it's okay, what's going on? But we do have to invest in our members. And if we don't invest in our members, we never identify the problem. I understand people's walk, right? Everyone has a story and everyone has a testimony. But they need to be able to speak up and not be afraid. And I think with CISM here in Pasco, we have peer support. We have a chaplaincy program. We have a resource that any of our members 24 hours a day can call this number, and there is someone on the other end to provide that service that they can talk to. And we want to help our members. We do. And I think there's more of an awareness now within the fire service, but we still have a lot of work to do. And, but resources, getting together with your local resources. If you can get the county involved, like here, our county is so involved. We're blessed. We're truly blessed to have the county involved and believe in the initiative, believe in mental health, and believe in, hey, we need to help our, not just firefighters, but corrections, our sheriffs, all first responders, and military. So I'm bragging on the county because they have brought into what we're trying to do here. And there's work. We're going to continue to make improvements. But the improvements are going to come for advocating for members to speak up and don't hold back. It's okay.
That care that you have on such a deep level, and I can see you have that, and that the fact that you can bring it into the leadership role, it's crucial because you never know whose lives you've marked and who you've helped to save as well.
We'll return to our conversation with Chief Perez right after this special Resilience Toolbox segment. On this installment of Resilience Toolbox, we're spotlighting Pronuvo, the company pioneering proactive whole-body imaging for the early detection of cancer and other diseases. We'll be hearing from Dr. Sefi Chodakewitz, retired firefighter Sal Banchita, and Dr. Robert Bard.
We're also giving away a Pronuvo full body scan. At the end of this segment, we'll provide the links to enter the scan giveaway contest, and we're also offering a discount code for $300 off a Pronuvo full body scan. Dr. Chodakewicz, how is Pronuvo different from traditional MRI technologies? Well,
what's different about Pronuvo's approach to MRI and adaptation of MRI is the area of the body that we could cover. We go from the top of the head to the ankles within the same 1 hour scan slot. Most MRIs focus on a narrow area of the body, whether it's one region, just the head, or just the abdomen, or just the pelvis. Well, we designed our MRI protocol to basically cover the whole area of the body in one exam.
In what ways is Pronuvo working with firefighters and other first responders?
We work with local firehouses to provide Pronuvo scans to their department. We recognize that there's an alarmingly higher than expected rate of cancer in firefighters compared to the general population. And we want to educate our communities about the advantages of early detection and foster a culture of proactive health management within the firefighter community as well.
We scan people with imaging ultrasound and with the MRI, the Pronuvo, because we find problems before they become real problems.
My name is Sal Bancheter. I am a retired New York City firefighter. I was an engine 316 in East Elmhurst, Queens.
Sal has been an extraordinary example. He's been a tireless advocate. He's been on the pile at 9/11. He's been doing the right thing for the people on the job. He's the real person. He's gone through everything. And he found out that the Pronuvo is a non-invasive way of following these diseases.
When I first entered and I came to Pronuvo, I was very impressed with the staff, basically the surroundings when you actually walked into their Manhattan office. It was very clean, very nice, very organized.
We want to make the MRI experience very positive. You know, our clinics are set up to be essentially very calming environments. They almost feel like spa-like experiences. There's soothing music in the background. You know, usually before an MRI, you have to fast. After the MRI is done, we have snacks ready for you, drinks ready for you. MRIs are notoriously claustrophobia inducing. They're often very tight and narrow, and people can feel anxiety within them. But our systems, the space within them is a little bit roomier. We have special memory foam cushions that make it more comfortable to lie there for an hour while you're getting the scans.
They walked you to every single step verbally first. They asked you if you're claustrophobic or not. Then they kind of wrap you up, and they were very professional, and they took their time and did not rush you at all. They actually have a monitor that snaps onto the helmet. They can speak to you and you can go back and forth.
We have a way to be distracted so you can watch Netflix and watch a movie and get distracted for the whole hour it takes to finish getting all the images. Along with the MRI service and getting a diagnostic report, etc., the patients get a Pronuvo app, which offers educational material to explain anything that we might talk about in the radiology report.
My whole entire scan and report is on my app. Now, I've showed people in the medical field that app and my medical files, and they were extremely impressed. The amount of detail that is done with the MRI was absolutely fascinating. The best thing about it is after your testing and everything is done, you actually go on a Zoom, and I was with a radiologist, Dr. Seth, and you're on your computer, and he's bringing up an image, whether it's your heart, your gallbladder, your liver, your kidneys, your pancreas, I mean, everything. I was just amazed.
The body is a dynamic entity. It's changing. When you can have a snapshot that tracks you over time, you can then have a better sense to gauge when a pathology is more unstable or progressing in an undesirable direction at an alarmingly higher rate than you would expect.
We can do cancer screening minimally invasively or non-invasively because it's available, it's painless, and it alerts you before you run into problems that you've got a significant issue which can be either watched, biopsied, or treated quickly.
It's basically a baseline of where your body is today. Regardless whether you were a firefighter, you worked at ground zero, you're on a pile, it's a point in time for yourself, and it's a tool.
So the baseline allows us to document benign findings and confirm stability, as well as track more subtle changes into the future that may alert us to earlier indicated action.
you know, I always tell everybody to try to be vigilant. You see something, try to act on it, ask the questions. What I want people to do is be able to get a second, a third opinion, kind of educate yourself and be able to take it forward. You want your health to be number one. You want to be there for your wife. You want to be there for your kids. I have three daughters, and you want to be there for your grandkids.
To learn more and for $300 off a Pronuvo scan, go to Pronuvo.com/responderresilience. That's Pronuvo.com/responderresilience. To enter the body scan giveaway contest, go to respondertv.com/p/scan. That's respondertv.com/p/scan.
I wanted to switch gears and talk to you a little bit about the cancer initiative. So we've talked a little bit about cancer awareness and how it's plaguing the fire service, which we're all aware of. But can you talk about some of your cancer initiative more specifically?
Yeah. So here in Pasco County, and we're the only department in the state that's doing this, and we may be the only department in the nation. Excuse me. We have what's called the decontamination program. Mm-hmm. So we have two units. We have Decon 1 that's on the west side of the county and Decon 2 that's on the east side. So when a structure fire is activated and they are on scene of a working structure fire, this unit, Decon 1, responds. They get on scene and every member who was in the IDLH condition and they have the contaminants has to go through a decon contamination process, meaning we have resources. We have supply gear reserve gear that's in this massive truck. They go in according to their size. It's already documented. So the guys, they have the laptops. They have everyone that's on scene. They have their sizes from their coat all the way down to their boots, Nomex gloves. They'll take that gear. They'll wrap it up. They'll package it up, label it. They also scan it so they can keep track of the gear. They'll put that gear on a truck. So before leaving the scene, they take the entire air pack. Mm-hmm. They take the helmets and they go through a decontamination process on scene.
Wow.
So now we put the air pack back in service. It's clean. Their helmets are clean. And they take the gear, they take it back, and they wash it through a process. It goes through a washing process, and then they have it returned to them the next shift. They'll retrieve the loaner gear that they were received, and they get it back. They clean that, and then they get it back on the unit, and they have it. It's like walking into a walkthrough of a heavy rescue, but it's bigger. And they have on one side, they have the pants. On one side, they have the coats. On another area, they have the boots. Sweet and too. They have glove and Nomex. And we do that on both sides of the county. Mm. And it's been a win-win for us and decreasing the cancer initiative. You know, we work closely with – we have a health and safety chief here that works closely with our members, but also with the University of Miami's. It has really had a hard push here about the cancer initiative and the green buckets. And we had that on our units and they will start with that until the decon unit arrives on scene. But it's been a great push. We just, we're developing a decon depot at one of our fire stations. Cause right now, currently at the two stations, we have two washers, one that's can wash, six sets of gear and another washer that can wash three sets of gear, and they're there being washed. But now we're doing a decon depot where we'll triple the amount of gear that we can wash at one time, which helps reduce reflex time. And that's going into service here. They're working on the plumbing and the piping. The machines are already here. The gear dryers are already here. They're just working on more of that foundational piece, but we have, it's been a blessing. So we have other departments that are calling and asking about our decon program. We just had a department in Sacramento out in California call about our decon program. Mm-hmm. We're sharing the information. We're sharing it because if we can share that information on how our foundation has been laid out, we're telling people, listen, take it and make it better and share it and then share back with what you've done to make the improvements. But it's been a win-win. It was a little bit of a buy-in at first, but like anything in a fire service, no one likes change, right? Everyone wants to keep a hold of their gear, but we've been able to explain the why behind that. And now we're getting buy-in from the job and from the battalion chiefs. The battalion chiefs are held accountable to ensure that all the members are going to go through this decomp process if you've been exposed to the elements and the contaminants of a working structure fire or a hazmat. Mm-hmm. Or let's just say, you know, we roll up on a motor vehicle accident, we got extrication, we've got blood, we got bodily fluids. Well, they will go through that decomp process as well.
That's impressive.
It's exciting. It's been addressed by, we just had our union, as well as a few members of our decomp team, go up to Canada to talk about the initiatives of this decomp program. So we're thankful. We want to continue to keep pushing it out. We want to continue to keep making it better and share the information.
That's great.
This episode is made possible by R.E. Lawler Graphics and Printing. Let R.E. Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. To learn more, visit relawler.com.
Chief, let's switch gears here, because we have some terms that you supplied to us, and we'd like to try something new. And we're going to throw a word out to you and have you kind of respond to it in a short form, you know, soundbite type of thing. But we'll pitch out one at a time, and then you tell us what your perspective is on it. First word is faith.
Faith brings peace. If you don't have peace, you know, and if you don't have God in your life, it's very difficult to walk on this journey. And I know faith for me personally had brought peace into my life, the trials and the journey that I've been on. You know, I just got to have peace, and at all, we got to have a relationship with God. And it's not religion; it's just having a relationship with God and bringing peace to your internally.
How about drive?
Ooh, drive. Drive is. It's like having faith. Drive is not giving up, right? When you're down at your lowest, know that you can. Life's not over, right? You can get out of this, and it's just having the ability to continue to move one bite at a time, one step at a time, one day at a time, and that to me is drive. It's moving. Don't stop.
Let's talk about integrity.
Oh. Always trying to be, always doing the right thing. I know that's the cliche, but it is true. Always doing the right thing when you're supposed to. Being fair, being consistent, always willing to listen and make the right decisions and give them the why. I think if you stay within those core values, there you'll never go wrong. You know, if you're a person without integrity, I'm a big believer in you're going to open a Pandora's box and it's going to come back to bite you where you don't want it to be bitten. So I believe in integrity is big with me. So, you know, in the past, throughout my fire service career, you know, there are people that have insecurities. We all have insecurities. But when people attack your integrity or character, I have a problem with that. Right, because I'm always going to be fair. I'm going to do the right thing, and I'm going to do it with integrity. Right, and I believe in sticking to those core values that we spoke about earlier when it comes to integrity.
And what about humility?
Oof, rolling up your sleeves and being able to sit down with the members. Humility to me is not thinking you're better than other people, but getting into these firehouses, having a cup of coffee and listening. That's humility. To me, that's what it's about. It's about them. And like I spoke about earlier, and how we can support them and allow them to be successful. I think at this level, God and my wife keeps me grounded and having humility. Mm-hmm. And my wife, who has been a huge, huge component in my life and in my journey. God brought her into my life when I needed her the most. And I know I did the same for her. And she keeps me humble. She reminds me, not to say that I get, but it, you need that accountability partner to stay humble. And she's that person for me.
Do you think part of humility for you is also being able to say to your guys, if you've made a mistake or if your judgment was a little off on something, to be able to say that to them and own it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm okay, Bonnie, with saying, hey, you know what?
Yeah.
You're correct. That's on me. That's my fault. I take responsibility. I'm sorry. I will be the first one to apologize, because when you own up to your mistakes, the game's over. We don't go down that road of lack of integrity, but yes, being it, people will respect you, will trust you, will buy into what you're doing if they know you can be vulnerable and be humble with it and be able to admit, hey, that's on me. That's what good leaders do. Good leaders are going to pawn it off, not pawn it, but give kudos to those who are leading and serving. I don't need the accolades. I want the men and women of Pasco County to have those accolades, and let me showcase them. And you're right. We don't have enough people to say, I'm sorry.
Right.
And I think as when you get into this role of leadership and being humble, you have to be able to realize we all make mistakes. None of us are perfect. None of us are perfect. So once you realize it's okay, then that humility is always there.
Thank you. The last word is service.
Ooh. You know, that all ties in with humility, integrity, faith, drive. You know, I'm going to walk, so I'll use Pasco County. I still visit firehouses. And I'm going to continue to visit firehouses. We have 29 stations, and we have 3 more coming on board here. So it is a task, a daunting task, but it's okay, right? We want to make sure we're bridging the gaps. But I want to be a servant leader for them. I tell them, I will walk alongside you. I won't walk behind you and hide in the bushes, and I won't be too far in front of you to where you can't see me. We will walk this journey as servant leadership together. And rolling up my sleeves, washing a cup, sweeping. I'm not above any of that. And once the members see, hey, I serve just like them, and I'm there to actively listen and help bridge those gaps, and I'm okay with rolling up my sleeves, that service, that humility, that integrity, all that drive all comes into play, and it encapsulates what we as leaders should be doing for a rank and file. I understand that we have to sit in this office and we have to do work. I understand that. But leadership, to be able to serve, we need to step up. We need to walk out those doors and be out in the field with our rank and file and listening to the members to help fix and bridge gaps where those gaps exist.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all that with those 5 words. It's a powerful piece right there.
Yes, it is. I'm thankful. I'm just thankful to God that He's given me this opportunity, and I owe it to Him. He truly has given me the opportunity to be here before each and every one of you. And one day when we can sit around and talk about the story, you'll see why I am always giving Him the honor and the glory, because it was Him that got me to this place today.
Well, great. Look forward to that moment. As we wrap up, please share with us any events you have coming up. I know you're going to be speaking at the Lieutenant Andy Fredericks FDNY Memorial Seminar. By the time this airs, it will probably already have taken place. But talk about that and anything else you have going on that's of interest.
So January 26th, Friday, Saturday, I'll be up at Elmsford, New York, speaking at the Andy Fredericks. I'll be speaking on the leadership journey of the fire service, and then I'll also be speaking on tactical decision making with minimal staffing. And that's just to help our members, you know, a lot of volunteers, what can we do with what we have at our disposal and to be successful on the fire ground. I'm also part of the New York State Association of Fire Chiefs. I am part of their COLT, which is called Company Officer Leadership Training. My wife and I just got back last week from Albany, New York. We were up in a place called Gloversville, New York. And now February will be up in Monroe County, speaking on leadership as well as the tactical decision-making for minimal staffing. And then I will go up in March, and I will be up in Erie County near Buffalo in a volley, and a volunteer station up there as well. And then we also have officer development that I'll be speaking at, again, towards the end of January here in our region out in St. Pete Fire Rescue. They do an officer development, and I'll be speaking on leadership and how we can help our younger officers who are up and coming to just be good leaders, with not just within the firehouse, but within the community. And then I'll be going up north to Syracuse in June to speak at their conference that I'm a part of. So I am a part of the association, and I owe it all to them. Sue Rivera, who's the coordinator of the education program there, she gave me my start 10 years ago, and I'm just so thankful for them to always opening up doors for me and my family to come and share my message and my testimony.
Well, perhaps a book about faith, drive, integrity, humility, and service is on the horizon one day.
I like that, Bonnie. I like that. I do a little brain dumping. I do have some stuff that I just dump as I move along, especially when I'm teaching. But I like that. I do. I like that.
Good.
How can people get in touch with you? Any social media, website, anything like that you want to share?
So I'm on LinkedIn. It's my wife created the LinkedIn page because I'm not on social media. But she created because she thought it was good for me. But you can go to Chief Anthony T.P. Perez on LinkedIn. You can find me there. You can also, if anyone wants to get a hold of, in touch with me, they can call me at area code 727-808-3394. Or they can send me an email at aperez@pascocountyfl.net. And I'm always looking to collaborate and foster relationships, not just here in Florida, but across the country. We all need it, right? We all need each other, and we all need to be accountable for each other. That's how you can get a hold of me.
Great. Thank you so much.
We are so grateful for your time. We learned something from every guest, and we learned a lot with you as well. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you, David. It was my honor to be here. I'm just so blessed to be here with you all to share a story. And thank you so much for everything. And if you ever need anything on our end or from me, please don't hesitate to reach out.
Great.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chief. Look forward to catching up with you in person when I make my journey into the western part of the state.
Yes. And yes. Cuban coffee and some Puerto Rican food will do the job.
Sounds great. All right. Well, blessings. We really appreciate you being here today.
Thank you. God bless you guys. Have a great day. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
This episode is made possible by R.E. Lawler Graphics and Printing. Let R.E. Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. To learn more, visit relawler.com.
Please like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder TV, and Responder Wellness, Inc., bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and our website is respondertv.com for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself. Take care.